Sounds like you're able to hear me. this is really weird. Yeah, thanks for the feedback. I need that feedback via the text chat as we kind of go along. We've been kind of hanging around here in this Second Life bit for a lot of the day. And I've got had the chance to listen to Lee Blackall. He went ahead with his presentation anyway, over in New Zealand. And he's approaching a similar sort of a problem in trying to create openness and collaboration within his educational institution. And a lot of what he's doing seems to be from the top down. What I'm going to talk about is more from the bottom up and using students or having students involved in that change process a little bit more. First of all, I'd like to just talk a little bit about what it's like to be an IT teacher and get you to empathise a little bit with what the problems are. First of all, right across the country and probably the Western world, we're seeing a decline in the number of students that are choosing to do IT in the senior secondary area. But the interesting thing here is that there seems to be a skills deficit in this area, in that people are looking for high-level IT skills and finding difficulty in filling those positions. So there's a bit of an anomaly there. Anyway, back to the classes problem and the class sizes is that what IT teachers are kind of doing now is trying to do some fairly creative things to keep that subject alive and keep it running. Some of the things that happen are a Year 11 class might be combined with a Year 12 class, and they're both taught together, although what's being taught is differently. Another strategy that's being used is horizontal grouping. So you might find an IT class being put together with some other subject that makes use of computers, and those two subjects are being taught together. There's some interesting things happening where groups of schools are working together. So there might be one teacher in one school, and that teacher is working with students from other schools, and so there's a collaboration there across the schools, and that is happening within the Limestone Coast here in South Australia, Panola and such like. Some teachers are taking on an extra line. Oh, cool. Some teachers are taking on extra lines, so they're working more, they're teaching an extra class in order to make it work, and so forth. So there's all these different things that are kind of happening. In addition to that, there's been people from universities saying to us, you know, how do we get in touch with students? How do we promote our subject? And they're finding it difficult to reach students. We've got people in the business, IT business area, trying to promote, IT as a thing to learn. And so what I want to talk about is possibly a way to bring all these things together. I'd be very interested at some stage to be, kind of finding more answers to why students aren't choosing our subject, but at the moment I just want to accept the fact that students are not choosing IT as a subject in their droves and just leave it at that. The solution I'd like to put forward is to do with creating some sort of senior secondary collaboration amongst students that also involves people from industry and tertiary sector and so on. And the reason I'd like to do, well, one of the reasons I'd like to do that is there's a problem with the small class sizes. Initially, when you look at a small class of, say, four or five students, you think, oh, wow, isn't that wonderful? But there is a problem there in that there aren't a lot of students to collaborate with. When I look at and listen to the students who have achieved really, really high scores in their Year 12 results, often one of the things that's talked about is, you know, I studied with my mate. He and I worked together all the time, and when it came to the tests or the assignments, we competed hard against each other. And what I'd like us to think about is a way where we might have a small class down here in Mount Gambier, but because my students have the opportunity of collaborating with students across the state or even across the country, they are able to work together with others and achieve, get the benefit of this sort of collaboration. An IT student online community. You know, I reckon that this is something that could help right here, right now. I'm just trying to think of what it would be like as a student to be able to work together with other students, you know, in the state or the country, but also where people from industry could chip in with some answers and suggestions. People from the tertiary sector could chip in with answers and some questions. You know, I could put questions out there and peers of mine could answer them, and people in the industry could say, well, you know, this is how it works in my business. And the people in the tertiary sector could say, here's another option you might want to think of, and, you know, so on. And so I reckon that I would feel that I was part of a community. I'd feel nurtured. I'd feel that I'd be establishing some long-term relationships, relationships that I might develop during my high school days, I might maintain throughout my university days, and it might even help me get into the workforce. So a part of it is this nurturing goal, closer links between secondary and tertiary, closer links with the industry itself. One of the things that I've been struggling with is how a group like that would be managed, and I'm kind of thinking that it would be possible for this to be pretty much self-managed, in that it's managed by students. I know of students who are moderators in other forums, and I can see students, or maybe even ex-students, so students who have moved on and now are in tertiary might be keen to share their knowledge and skills, and also have that little bit more experience and be prepared to be moderators for a group like that. There are issues, I guess, around things like child protection. I don't think that's insurmountable, but it's the sort of thing that has to be considered. This is hard. I feel like I'm talking to myself. I've seen Janet put up some notices here that we've got some vet and higher ed folks in the audience. I wonder if there would be any sort of initial reactions to the idea that I've put forward.
Folks?
Is it worth pursuing?
Yeah, Wendy? Any others? I'll try and type fast.
Thanks, Wendy. I wonder how we'd go about, the process for setting something like this up, and how we'd get, industry people involved, and tertiary. Yeah. Mentoring program. I was really, really impressed with the Google. What is it called? The Google. Highly open participation contest. The idea of students being able to be involved in some of the open source communities. Seemed to me to be, just from an ideals perspective, it seemed to be a tremendous move. I really don't know how successful it was, but that seemed to be like a good mentoring program.
That project is one where specific open source projects that are really have a good community, are pretty solid going, have been doing like a...
In a group like this, I'd see some...
Summer of Code for High School.
I'd see the role of the industry people and the tertiary people to be mentoring. I'd hate to see a situation where a student put up a question and immediately an industry person would put in the answer and that was the end of the discussion sort of thing. So, you'd want to, the industry people know how to best respond to students and mentor and guide as opposed to throw answers at them. He's at Grant High School,
Mount
Gambier High School.
Stop.
Yeah, Clinton has set up a wiki that other school techs access and contribute to.
I'm just wondering.
Yeah, it started out very small, but yeah, there are lots of people that are accessing that now.
Yeah. Can you hear me at all?
What about industry groups? How do you reckon we involve industry groups? What might be a good process for that?
Ask me a question. I'll type fast. Okay.
Where would we set
Jason?
It up? I'd love to get a kind of a group of people together to kind of nut a lot of this out. Where do we put it? How do we get the relevant groups involved?
Jason, I've typed in industry groups might be too commercial, communities might be connecting students. What else? Because he can't hear us.
Being too commercially concerned about people pushing their barrow.
Okay, so Jason, I've asked him to hold for a bit. Yeah.
I'm holding on.
Yep.
Thank you. building
Oh, yes. Yeah. I agree. We need to get some enthusiasts together. I think probably I might stop here. I'm feeling really it's quite difficult from my end of it. What I'd appreciate is if there is some discussion and some ideas and contacts, you know, people who are keen to kind of drive this a little bit further. I'm really interested in getting in touch. And do I have a URL for your wiki? Yeah, it's a bloody long one, though. Hang on, I can paste it here. Hang on, I'm turning sound off.
Okay, he's going to email, or he's going to post the links to his website. I'm more than happy to email information about what Pete's been up to anybody who's interested. Liddy. Yeah.
The notes for this talk are in a, you'll see it from that front page there.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the Limestone Coast scratch thing? Okay, yeah. We ran a workshop down here for Limestone Coast. That extends a few hundred kilometres around the place, but we've got a group of about 13, 14 teachers, middle school teachers, and spent 3 hours and showed them scratch. It worked really, really well. Very impressed. I think the teachers that came generally walked out keen to play with it in their schools. And I'm hoping that within our region, if we can get some interest around that in the middle school, that might help push things forward in the senior school.
Is that, that's pretty much what you're aiming for, so.
Yeah, I might leave it at that. Thanks for giving this a go, and yeah, good on you, Janet, for giving this a go. Even though the other things didn't work, I actually learnt a heck of a lot by just watching Lee's thing, and I've made a few contacts, so that's great. Cheers, thanks.
Yeah, okay. No, he's got my text, that's all he's got to go on, so as fast as I type is how he's catching up with us. He's in Mount Gambier, a teacher at a high school. They run Linux. They've done computer recycling workshops. We ran Software Freedom Day at Mount Gambier High School and used Scratch and Squeak as one of the things we were demonstrating to students and parents as they were coming around looking at free software. They also run an open CD publishing project from their wiki. So they've got a, it's not OpenCD anymore, it's OpenDisc, but they've been getting schools from around South Australia together and publishing their chosen set of software that they think is a good fit for schools in South Australia. I tried to get a programming camp for kids going in Mount Gambier because he's dead keen, and looking at Scratch and Squeak and Python in a camp over the weekend. The logistics of that got a bit hard to try and figure out, the Edna website people are interested in hosting communities. There's the main challenge for this sort of thing is that it feels like the right kind of thing in terms of the kinds of conversations that Alex is having about networked communities and people being able to do lifelong learning, which you know, it's been a bit of a theme today as well. The challenge is around the organisations and how they're organised and how their scope for risk is shaped, and then trying to network with communities like open source communities do, where you've got diverse people and everybody just pitches in, and it's difficult to dovetail the school stuff with that kind of open community. But hopefully with that kind of passion and commitment, sitting there all day today while we sorted out our bugs, if we can get that kind of connectivity, that would be really useful for our rural schools, where they have perhaps one or two people. They might be teachers, they might be students who are really passionate and interested, but they've not got that kind of collaborative context because they don't have other students and other teachers that they can actually hook in with. Yes, Wendy? Okay, Wendy was saying that there's a group online in Second Life doing English teaching. Good on you. Is likely to be facing the same kinds of challenges that an online student community would face. One of the things I typed up there was that he's got a student who's a graduate student from his high school helping to run his network, including the Linux work. And Clinton hangs out on the IRC channels that the rest of our open source community participates in, and he's listening and learning. Carl, who was here today, you know, graduated from high school and volunteered in a local community context, and has been participating in the online IRC communities in Ubuntu and GNUSense. And I guess I'm seeing that what's happening is that individual people are doing this online student community type thing with us as an open source community. And that there's a question of scale and of our capacity to absorb that kind of participation from schools, but that it would be a really lovely way to be able to broaden the skill base, because that kind of support for the people who are supporting the teachers as an open community could be a really good way to broaden open code and the ability to risk as a teacher in a classroom, because you know that you've got a community behind you that can come in and make sure the audio works or whatever. Do you know what I mean? That there's if you're in a context where you're the only person risking, then you don't have the backup from other people to be able to help deal with it when it doesn't go quite right, or to actually help you work through and come up with better ways of doing things.
Service set up more in the land management area.
Yeah.
And what we do is we might assign a task or to one of the other TAFE colleges, and they're to complete that task from their end on our servers, and vice versa. And monitoring those servers at night, I've seen students from other TAFEs communicating with each other at 2 o'clock in the morning, which I thought was a bit of an achievement. Can't even get them into class some days.
So,
The scope is there.
Yeah.
But coordination is really difficult.
Yeah.
And then you've got also the issues with the inappropriate content if someone does, mess around with the system.
Mm. One of the conversations we've had about that sort of thing has been around, if you've got a context, and he was suggesting student moderation, if it's entirely logged, and people know that the system is logged, then people behave differently in a space where they know they're on record. And that has an impact in terms of, you know, you're in public, and I just think that a lot of that kind of content blocking defence away from stuff is probably not required if you're actually able to say, this is all here, we can see what's going on. And in the same, Peter's conversation to me about this sort of thing was that the way that you deal with somebody who was graffitiing the locker would be to treat that individual instance, because you can see it happening and you can have a look. And in the same way, if you're logging and tracking the kinds of conversations that are happening online, you can go and deal with the individual instance that's a problem. Because it's open, that's a bit more challenging, but again, we're open here in our wireless and that sort of thing. And I think part of the challenge is that we as a community are facing a change in model. And so we're going from a context where we define what's in and what's good by the shape of the institution or the organisation or the group that we belong to. And if we want to work in more open networked communities, that we actually have to develop skills around participation. Somebody was talking earlier today about register. Barbara Dew, register for the kind of English she would use on a mobile phone would be different to the kind of English she would use in an academic paper. And I think that's the same kind of thing in terms of Wikipedia, using neutral point of view, and your participation is about something that's going to fit to that context. And so I suppose it's us broadly learning ways to be able to be open, because we're all getting better at putting something into the mix which is actually useful in that specific context. Roland, you had a question.
Yeah, I think also the boys have changed too. Used to be an incredible interest by a lot of boys in getting under the lid of the machine, working out how the technology works. That doesn't have much of an appeal to students anymore. It's actually the application of it. We think email's cool. They've moved on to SMS. I wonder about the kind of things that people find engaging by the gender, and ways that kind of work with that.
I'm not an expert, but in looking at the kinds of things that we were looking at for Squeak and Scratch, things which were related around story,
yes,
were interesting from women's perspective, and the things which were more competitive or, as you say, sort of pulling things apart, tended to be the things which weren't all more natural or more general for boys' interest. But I think that partly that is that the kinds of things that get made that are competitive tend to be very guns and cars, and the kinds of things that get made that are stories might be shaped differently, and that I think that there's a lot of room for exploring things. Squeak and Scratch are interesting spaces to watch. There's a woman in Switzerland who's been working with Pierre and André Dreyfus with Squeak and Scratch, who makes amazing steam engines in Squeak, and that they're really quite like wonderful pieces of, you know, modelling a steam train. So there's sorts of ways that you can express yourself in these tools that we might not be used to yet, perhaps.
Could it be the stories that we're telling? So I'm an IT educator, and a lot of the stories that I'm telling perhaps need to change, because that's what teaching often is. And the examples that we're using, situations, the context, you have a student designing a problem for an office as compared to a student designing perhaps a solution that's bringing a community together in a third world country.
Mm. I think part of the challenge for teachers is that all of this stuff is about letting go of the answer. And that it's in a school context where you've got to come with a certain percentage of students hitting a certain kind of hit rate on the kinds of answers that they should deliver in a specified context, that the policies around the school, around copyright, around, as you said earlier, I think, around that kind of being able to measure success, at counterpoint to teachers who want to be able to risk and to allow students to explore on a network and accidentally break it and then put it back together again because now they know they don't do it that way, and that sort of stuff. That all of those things where you don't quite get it right are the things that actually move you on, and that in some ways that we're structured outside of the school to make it very challenging or risky for a teacher not to have the answer, and that in these kinds of situations the teacher needs to be able to say, well, I can work with you around the social skills or the educational skills related to working with this tool. I might not know this specific tool. You might have, there's when we had Jimmy Wales here talking about wikis, and he was talking about, you know, the kinds of social skills involved in Wikipedia. There were students at the breakfast. There was a student at the breakfast who was a bureaucrat on Wikipedia. This person has a lot of skill in dealing with that kind of challenging, open, mediated communication for a specific goal. And so that student, a teacher of that student, is going to be dealing with somebody with some pretty sophisticated skills in that kind of context. And so being able to work with, you know, people with all sorts of diverse levels of skill, experience and that sort of thing, in a way that they can come to, you know, to feel comfortable exploring and risking and that sort of thing is probably a different teaching literacy than it is for people teaching in a context where the teacher knows the answers. I don't know if that's useful. Robin.
You were talking about risk and making mistakes and learning from them. I mean, a lot of adults that I teach are so scared to make a mistake. Our schools aren't structured around learning from our mistakes and being allowed to make them and grow from them. You get punished for mistakes.
I think that, yes. Robin's saying that we're not encouraged to make mistakes, and that people have a fear of making mistakes as a result. I think that the computer recycling that Robin and some Kylie and Jan from Computer Bank are working with is a really nice context for people breaking that down, because the tech that you're using is old and cruddy. It potentially doesn't work, so it's not like the feeling of pulling something apart which is beautiful and you might break it. So being able to work with something which is imperfect or which is, and being able to work with open code where there's no risk, there's no copyright risk, there's no you shall not go beyond this point type restraint on the kinds of materials you're working with, is a very powerful thing in breaking down that kind of risk, that fear of getting things wrong.
Just following on from that, I mean, some of the work I do, in New Zealand, is with early childhood, programming a lot of computers to early childhood education. We get a lot of feedback from the teachers in that area. This is, they're very, very concerned about making mistakes. What I try and get across to them is, you know, how do, you know, please tell me how you observe children learning. They say, you know, they all get around the computer and they all, basically what it boils down to is the kids will click on anything, right? And they'll just do it through. And what I try and say to them is, if the kids can do it, so can you. Point one. Point two is, if it only takes you a couple of clicks to get into trouble, it'll only take you a couple of clicks to get out of it, which usually gets a response. That's it. You know, it is just a matter of playing. You lose the capability to play in a lot of cases, because what the feedback I'm getting, especially from the older teachers, is, you know, they are required to know everything the children, before the children do, which is not necessarily true. And just following on from that, there's a video from the TED conference in Monterey, a guy called Ken Robinson, which is very, very good. And it's about, you know, creativity and the ability to make mistakes, we're looking for from parents. It's very difficult.
I'm sorry, what was your name?
Carl Fisher.
Carl from IBM New Zealand was talking about the early childhood education projects they're working on and teachers being able to feel comfortable risking and getting a couple of clicks into trouble is okay because you can get out again with those same couple of clicks. And that Ken Robertson on the TED Talk website has an excellent presentation on being able to risk mistakes in an educational context. Anybody else? I didn't repeat your conversation or your point earlier. You were talking about working with a school that was a long way away from you. Did you want to repeat the schools that you're working with? Sorry.
Oh, I work in the TAFE sector.
That's right.
Okay,
Brisbane TAFE and Townsville TAFE.
And we had a fair bit of success with one student, for instance, wrote a bit of C code to turn on, like a relay, to turn Cisco route on and off. So it allowed another student to do a password recovery on, and they worked that out themselves.
Yeah, okay. So,
it's a lot of effort to set up.
Yeah. So the collaboration between, for example, Brisbane and Townsville TAFE involved a lot of coordination, but that the student-to-student interactions were really useful and that they did some interesting things and were up late online collaborating and things like that. Yeah. Okay, great. Olin?
I'm sorry to hog it again, but I think it's really important. I've heard it before. The idea of students actually having a hand in being the content creators and having a hand in the process that's happening around them.
Yeah.
We had a lot of success at our school when I allowed students to build an operating system from scratch on a computer to play with the BIOS. And it's something that we're getting increasingly better at locking students out from. What was engaging for me was that the girls, I felt, got a lot more out of it than the boys and were able to take it a lot further. As one of them pointed out, I'm a Year 12 student, I'm supposed to be doing IT, I'm supposed to be really good at it, but I've never installed a program before because I'm locked out at school and I'm locked out at home.
Yeah.
And this is really exciting. And at the time, I'm beginning to realise that I'm getting better and better, so just producing a few little office workers who'd be working in environments tight with firewall. I want to do some scope towards allowing students flexibility to play.
Roland was talking about people who are excited by the opportunity of installing software because in the context that they're usually in, they don't get the opportunity to install things because it's locked down. Jason?
Is suggestion, first of all, I'm not a psychologist, but as I understand, it's been often remarked upon that children often typically have a very great curiosity about objects and things around them and the way the world works and the way in which one's computer programs work and how the computers work is just another aspect of that. So obviously that interest and that curiosity is something that needs to be encouraged in all areas in which one becomes educated, including this one. And the education system, I think, needs to work on ways of capturing that, enhancing that, and showing people that there really is something very interesting and very important to be learned and to be understood in this area, as in the whole range of other areas that a good education comprises. Just also following on from the very last point about getting into operating systems and other matters. I remember what I learned on, a lot of what I knew or what I learned as a child was discovered by using Apple II computers in the late 1980s. And one of the important aspects of those is that as soon as you switch it on, it goes into basic programming mode. That's what it does. And if you load the operating system, that was what it would put you into. And if you did anything particularly interesting or particularly foolish, you'd find yourself in the ROM monitor mode where you could fiddle around with the assembly language for the processor and so on and so forth very easily. I mean, it's a very simple computer. It's something that's not all that difficult to come to terms with or to understand. And nowadays, with the very, very complex operating systems and computers that we have, I don't think we have that kind of environment readily available to us that someone can go into and understand everything from the high-level programming language to the machine code that that generates. Whereas what we had in the late 80s, I think, captured all of that, and it was very open, and you could do what you liked with it and learn quite a lot.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason. I'll repeat it just in case. Jason's talking about the natural inquisitiveness of childhood, and that educational contexts need to be able to capture and enhance that, and that the kinds of software and hardware that we have in modern computers separate people a long way from the kinds of assembly and how the machine actually works that felt a lot more accessible with older applications from the 1980s, like the Apple II. Thank you. Anybody else? I think we're all done. Thank you very much for your comments and questions. I'm hoping that we get this recorded, because I think Peter would love to hear from you all. And I'll make sure that the information about where to find Peter is available, so that you can follow up on these thoughts too. Thanks very much for coming. Cheers.